Hello, you are listening to the Roanoke Collaboration Project Radio, where we discuss a Radio IQ news story for Radio Melrose. You can follow us at roanokecollaboration.org. Today we're going to discuss a story on restorative justice in public schools.
Acacia is 13 years old, and she said she was facing bullying in gym class. The incident escalated, but...
Even though I was upset, I chose not to fight. I went to a counselor instead. This wasn't the first time it happened, to me or to others. And even after asking for help, it felt like no one was really listening. I'm sharing this because students need adults to listen before things get escalated.
Acacia, we're only using her first name because of her age, was one of several young Virginians who said they made mistakes at school and faced a punitive system that only made things worse. Enter a legislative effort that aims to limit the expulsion of public school students unless the school first implements a restorative practice. There are exceptions for guns, serious drug, or other aggravated circumstances. It also asks the Department of Education to collect data on punishment in schools. Here's the House patron, Richmond Delegate Dolores McQuinn.
If we can catch young people early enough, we can help change their lives. We can help bring about transformational changes so that they are able to live a successful life. But just expelling and suspending them, it is not the answer.
Arlington Senator Barbara Favola is among co-patrons of the bill in the Senate. She said a similar program in her district has been successful.
We want to hold students accountable, but more importantly, we want to do it with empathy and with evidence-based practices.
In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
All right, so to discuss the story today, we've got...
Dana Ackley, author of A Little Book to Save Humanity.
Wayne Strickland, former executive director of the Roanoke Valley Allegheny Regional Commission.
Catherine Elam, former executive director of Junior Achievement of Southwest Virginia.
Bill Lee, retired pastor of Loudoun Avenue Christian Church.
Cynthia Lawrence, director of workforce development at Carilion Clinic.
William Fralin, former member of the Virginia House of Delegates.
Michael Brockta, CIA retired and past president of the Kiwanis Club of Roanoke.
Okay, so how do we handle disruptive students? Do we do it the right way, or should the state mandate we do it in a different way?
I would like Catherine? To speak to that. Being a part of Junior Achievement, we went into a mini school where we would see certain scenarios play out. And I think most importantly is that we do listen to what the student is about and what their background may be. I remember that we've had some children who really did not know how to handle the pressures of school. They were coming from homes where they were not getting a full night's sleep. There's a lot of factors that we did not realize until we sat and talked to some of the people that we were going to work with in each one of those schools. And I know some schools have gone to the point where children are actually going in to do meditation, doing yoga to help them calm down. Sometimes that works. Others have gone into areas where they got to play chess for the day. And it was something that would keep their mind occupied and do other things. So I think we don't want to be punitive all the time. You need to look at each one of these students and, again, what their backgrounds have been when they come there.
So I think we all agree, and everybody agrees, that people should feel safe at school. And if they don't feel safe, they need to let people know about it. I think an argument might be some people that would not be in favor of this would say, well, you're sort of rewarding people that are acting poorly at the expense of somebody who's the victim. Now, we heard from a bullying victim in the story. I'm interested in if that changes anybody's perspective.
I want to say that I'm Bill? A former public school teacher, but that's been so long. I taught in the Roanoke City Public Schools in the
Did
days.
You have a board of education?
Yes.
Meaning a paddle?
Yes. Yes.
Those days are gone.
Yes, that was the days of junior high school.
Right.
And I taught at a junior high school. I learned something.
Just not to interrupt, Bill, but Mr. Hackley at James Madison Junior High School, he had a board of education as well.
Yes.
This would have been 1977. Probably.
And you knew about that board.
I was aware. I was made aware.
But I learned this in the penal system. So I can transition to this. I was told that you cannot punish a person if you don't teach them because they won't understand why the punishment. So that's strange. I found that when I was a teacher, if I set the standard for everybody and treated every person as an individual with the standard, I had a better chance of my students not misbehaving. They understood this is the way it is. In the years I taught, I'm trying to think the number of times I had to use some kind of corrective action. But I think that part of what's happening in the system, that the Trinity has broken down. I'm not going to church on y'all. This is a Trinity. School, community, family. Those of us who are older, we had that. A lot of these youngsters don't. But I think we can get a surrogate. I think there's something we can do. But I think the system itself has to have standards. Because these kids see this, some folks getting away with stuff, and you treat me different. I think we need, I think that's a starting
point. When you say standards, you mean you mean a standard of discipline or a standard of behavior?
Standard of behavior, but also a standard of expectations. These are the expectations of this school. These are the standards of my classroom.
Right. Well, and your point about the family, you know, when I was in school, the worst thing you could do was tell my father. That would be the problem, not anybody at school. Yeah, Dana.
If you're going to set standards, you also have to help people learn the skills they need to meet those standards. In Denmark, since 1993, they have had 1 hour of classroom training a week in empathy and other emotional intelligence skills, and it's had a dramatic impact of a dramatic reduction in bullying. And that's near and dear to my heart because I know a young woman who is still carrying the scars of her bullying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bullying's a terrible problem, and it's you have to have a willing bully, I think, in some ways, to be able to sit down and talk these things out. And I'm not sure you always have that. Catherine.
Part of this bullying, of course, we all talk about it a lot, is the whole thing with social media. It mm-hmm. just doesn't shut off. I mean, that's one of the things. They're being attacked from different directions and things that they're reading and looking at their own devices that are going on, particularly when you're talking even elementary school. I was going to say we've had some incidents we know throughout this valley and well into the middle school and high school. But that is really a piece that in terms of us being older, we didn't have that. If you know, you might have had somebody to talk to you terribly, you had maybe a threat, but to know that you go home at night and you still keep getting messages and people that are entering that lane with others who don't really have all the facts. So I think that's the part that really intensifies what's going on with those people that are being bullied. And somebody needs to be able to shut that off. And
hey, you know, it's almost like you don't have a safe space anymore. At least when we were in school, when you went home, nobody was going to bully you at home. You had some relief.
Right.
You had to worry about the next day, but not what was going to pop up on your feed.
Well, some people get bullied at home, but that's another issue.
Mike.
You know, as I listen to this discussion, I only heard for a moment the idea that there was a Trinity involved. Thank you, Bill. And you mentioned the family. So when we look at the Roanoke community, not every student that is getting bullied has this kind of family environment where they can go home to and be supported. So how much of the problem is because of this sort of broken family model that so many of our students are living?
See, I would contend they have a family. It doesn't look like the family that we are accustomed to. So let me just say this because some folks will think I've lost my mind. I watched some drug dealers that I knew, the best parents I've ever seen of some folk I was trying to make sure didn't go the wrong way. Now, their behavior was not the behavior that I was agreeing with, but they would not allow that person to engage in the world that they were in. And I guarantee you, talking about getting hurt, if that person stepped out. So I think what has happened, my concept of family has shifted. My understanding of what of being a father and a parent and a mother, there are people out there doing it in ways that doesn't fit our standard, but they're doing it in such a way that's keeping some of these kids out of trouble. I've seen it. So what I'm saying, Mike, there's a different look for family. Oz and Harriet no longer, does not exist much in this day and time. And Ward and
June,
and Leave It to Beaver. That's been gone for a while.
Yeah. War and June split up some time ago. Cynthia? Oh, Catherine, sorry.
I'm just going to go back to the whole thing with social media and, again, family. Because a lot of times our families don't understand some of the things that these students have and have access to. They know that they should have them, and because everybody else has them, but they don't realize that there are those, I guess, roadblocks you could put on your children's devices to help them get through that. And I believe that some of us are going in the right direction when we look at some of these school systems that are saying no more devices during the day, because that's where you get to have an opportunity to breathe and talk to each other. And it's sort of like what we do with RCP. We have a civility pledge where we're trying to get people to look at and talk about, how do you have these discussions with each other? How do you check in with each other? So these are things that I see the school systems are working towards. And I think that is a break for these kids to be able to get off of that and find out who they actually have in a classroom with them.
Cynthia.
Yeah, that makes me think about a book that I wanted to reference for our listeners. And that's The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. It's made its way through the school systems with instructors, with administrators, with parents. And the whole premise of the book is to lay out the business case of the fact that we have replaced a play-based childhood with a phone-based childhood. Mm-hmm. And the book actually has some great tips on how we can, as adults and surrogate family and community, help these young people learn how to engage with each other constructively, how to put their phones down, and how to put those devices in their right place in their lives.
Right. And back to the story, getting people to sit down and talk is sort of the antithesis of this culture. You know, I will say at my place of work, I don't know how many disputes I've mediated by saying, stop emailing each other. Sit in a room. Don't come back to me until you have sat in the room and you can't resolve this. And it's amazing how many times it actually does get resolved, because people think they read in between the lines. And now that's going to sound very, very old to some people who would say nobody emails anymore. They text. Okay. Well, instead of texting, I think the point is there's got to be some sort of, and I think the intent of the bill that Delegate McQuinn put in is to try to get people to talk. I think the question is in a situation where somebody is threatened, like the bill applies to expulsion. You don't get to expulsion unless you've been through some hoops before, most likely, unless you brought a weapon to school or something. So I'm not sure how that fits in, but yeah, Mike.
You know, I was thinking about the solution that's being talked about in the program. The solution seems to focus on what the school system or what the teachers can do or should be legislated to do. Really, are we in a place where our teachers have this much extra time and this much unused ability to pile one more thing on their backs that could possibly be handled at home by the family that Bill talked about? I'm really concerned if we're looking to take an already stressed education system and turn to them first for a solution.
So you're listening to the Roanoke Collaboration Project Radio, where we discuss a Radio IQ news story for Radio Melrose. Today we're talking about restorative justice and a bill that's been introduced in the General Assembly. So what about Mike's point that are we taking away from all the other students? Are we taking time away from everybody that is behaving, that's doing what they're doing, in order to try to resolve these differences? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that made me think of it.
Well,
Bill?
Children are sent to school to be taught. And there are persons in the classroom who have been educated to teach. To Mike's point, they're becoming truant officers, they're becoming behavioral scientists, they're becoming everything but teachers. I think, again, Roanoke is big enough and small enough to become a model. There are a lot of retired people who should be doing something with their lives positive. Be very careful with that. Do something more with their lives. Maybe there's a system that we could come up with to have persons in schools, grandmothers, father figures, big brothers. Maybe we can pull it off. You know, some of this has been tried before. I think a whole lot of things that have been tried can be dusted off and tried again. it may be a moment where you can send a child to a safe space with an adult who says, sit here, baby, let me talk to you.
Well, you know, the bill is actually to create a pilot program. So it's not to mandate across the state. It's to create a pilot program to see how it works. To your point, Bill, I mean, maybe Roanoke would be a good place for that, Wayne.
We were talking, it seems to me that our schools are caught in the middle of expectations that older people in society have versus younger people, and they're trying to juggle all that. And so a lot of the people who make decisions are from the other generation that had the school board. And then there are other people who are saying, that's not the way to handle this. But the teacher is caught in the middle, and that person, their decision is coming down from somebody who says, take that student out and put them away. Do away, just kick them out of school. And that they may know that's not the answer, but it's just the way it is.
Well, and for somebody that's misbehaving and doesn't want to go to school in the first place, kicking them out may be what they really want, which is not helpful to anybody. Yeah.
We've got to take a look at how come people bully. And there's the old saying, hurt people hurt people. And so if we can begin to understand what's driving, it's important to demonize the behavior, but not demonize the person.
Mike.
There's an impact to us when young people are bullied, and that impact carries through into adulthood. So I'll just mention, for a number of years, I was chairing an ethics committee for one of the largest professional organizations in the world. Our job was to help almost 1 million professional people around the world adhere to an ethical standard, which included no bullying. So why is it that a large professional organization has to worry about bullying? And the answer is because it's not being adequately addressed at an early age.
You had asked earlier, you know, do we pay all the attention to the child that's acting up or bullying? I think a part of that is, too, we need to remember that we do have guidance counselors in. And now I see more schools trying to allow that the student, each grade level, has a day where they're with the guidance and they have to do guidance hours. So that these are some of the things they're talking about, exercises they're going through. I'm not saying it's a solution, but people notice now that guidance time needs to be a part of every child's schedule as they go through, starting with elementary school and then working through that. Well, and, of course, guidance counselors are overwhelmed as well. I mean, we'll say that.
I happen to know that. You're talking to the father of a school guidance counselor in elementary school, and she says, I can't call them guidance counselors or school counselors.
Right.
Oh. I don't know. I just don't want to get in trouble.
I have one, Bill, too, who's a school counselor.
You do?
Yeah. I'm thinking of the movie Lean on Me with Mr. Clark, who became infamous with that. And sometimes I like go back and parcel out pieces. Everything in that movie, and I think everything he did in school was not necessarily portable to this day and time. But something is, and that's helping young people feel good about themselves. There's no magic. There's no medicine you can give. I think that we have to work at changing the culture. I just have these crazy ideas.
It's okay. You're only on the radio. Go ahead.
But what if school became school again? I think some of y'all will understand when I say that it was you look forward to going to school. It was worth going to school. I'm not sure this generation, not all of them, is that sense of, I'm going to school.
Dana.
Well, you mentioned earlier about the kids who want to get kicked out of school. Nobody wants to go to school if they can't feel successful as they define it in school. That's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to be successful as they define success for themselves. And so maybe we need to find additional ways for people to feel successful at school, not cheap ways, but real ways.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I sometimes think the bullies are just asking for help. that they want attention, that they don't get enough attention at home or in any other place. They're not successful, as you said, Dana. So I don't know how you deal with that. How do you show someone attention if you're going to throw them out?
Yeah. Right, you know, and I think that's there's probably some psychological truth. We've got a trained clinical psychologist here, so yeah. I mean, to that, the other side of me thinks, yeah, but the devastating impact that it has on the victim, have we forgotten that? I mean, you know, at some point you have to be the adult and say, no, we're not going to tolerate this. We've discussed it, and you're not, you know, we're just. We have to protect the victims too, right?
Catherine or Cynthia?
Well, actually, I was going to jump in and pick up on your comment about how students are made to feel successful or given the opportunity to feel successful. So let's assume an older student, and let's assume that the student may not have engaged in the classroom study, but they have an interest outside the classroom that just isn't stimulated in the school environment, which is standardized and not everybody fits the same learning mold. And so I think back to the employer's opportunity to mentor and to bring students into the workplace and see the spark that can be ignited when you're matching a student's interest with what is actually happening in a commercial marketplace. I have seen that light bulb come on with students who are alternative learners, and they have thrived. And it is a wonderful opportunity that we as business owners and employers have to get engaged with our school systems and learn what we can do to provide those opportunities.
Yeah, you know, this is going to sound callous probably, but you know, there are some students that don't want to be at school. They just don't. And we have compulsory mandatory attendance. If you don't go to school till you're 18, you're in trouble. We also have remedial programs where people go back and say, well, that was probably wasn't my smartest version of myself, and I want to get my GED, and I want to move on. And I guess the question is, with limited resources, you know, we ask our schools now to serve breakfast, lunch, dinner in some cases, to serve after school programs, to do a lot of things that are, as Bill was saying, not necessarily teaching, more about caring. And that's not wrong. It's just, it's a lot to do. Yeah, Dana.
Well, I think what several of you have spoken to is, how do we build community? And early in this discussion, Bill told us that the Trinity that he mentioned was breaking down. And so how do we go about building community? And if we don't, we get to have a lot of casualties.
Right. Bill.
I just completed an experience with a young person. It was not court appointed. I made the decision that I would be with him for a month. And they said some things they wanted me to do. And I said, you know, I can't, that don't make sense to me. So what I did with him was take him to football games. I took him places with me. it was interesting to watch him light up. He said, we're going to the football game? I said, yeah. He said, I don't have to sweep floor. I said, no. We're going to football game. And I said, here's the deal. You don't have to sit with me. You don't have to even be seen with me. But at the end of the game, my truck is right there. And you'd best be there. The first game, the school where he was released from, the assistant principal saw him and hugged him and talked about how great a kid he was. And I said, what is this? It turns out, because he told me, he said, I hung with the wrong people, Reverend Lee, wrong people. He said, I told you I'm not a bad kid. And truth was, he was not a bad kid. He made bad choices.
There you go.
Now, 1 month, he was with me for 1 month. I'm hoping that he's a better young person. But the key is, again, the reason why I talk about the Trinity, the investment in these folks, rather than considering, I think he could go on the deep end. I really think so. But I think we could do that. Everybody can't. But I think that we got enough creative geniuses in Roanoke that we can come up with something that just might make that kind of difference. That's just me.
We got about 5 minutes left. Don't know who wants to follow.
Well, I don't want to forget your comment about the victim here.
Right.
Because we do have to come back to that. In those situations, there's more than one person involved. And so I think we have to take the same care and attention to the emotions and the community structure around those who have been victims of harsh treatment or verbal abuse or anything like that. I think that the weight on the school system is equal for all involved. So I think we have to look at that as well.
Yeah, you know, and I'm certainly not a school expert and certainly not a teenager expert. I'm not sure there's such a thing. Maybe Dana's as close as we've got. But middle school in particular seems to me to be a very difficult time for this kind of thing. And perhaps if we focus resources at that level, maybe there might make some sense to that. Wayne?
Well, I was going to ask, William, is that legislation, the pilot program, is going to be in the middle school?
I do not know. I don't know. I mean, all we have is we have our knowledge base is what the listeners have, which is what we just heard. But I suspect it's not limited to middle school.
To pick up on what Cynthia said, I was bullied for a couple of years by this older boy. And I went through 2 years of a very difficult time. How do we empower the people who are bullied? I finally hit him. I'm not sure that was the best thing, but it solved the problem. Mm-hmm. And so how do we empower people to not be bullied?
Right. And restorative justice could be a way where you have an outlet to go to get help and in a safe way. So it could be that. I'm skeptical that all bullies want to not bully, but I may be wrong.
I think it all goes back again to a lot of what people have said before about children. They all need to have some kind of guidepost. You need to know what's right, what the structure is. And it's a hard thing to do, but you've got to make the expectations be the same for everybody in the school. They need to at least hear it and then try to work from that point on. But I will say middle school seems to be the best time to try to catch some of these students and find out really what their talents are. And that's really what's been successful, I think, for a lot of programs. We're able to start them there, the career technical courses that they're being offered. I will say I had the opportunity to interview some of the students who are going to get scholarships in their senior year, but most of them caught on fire in that middle school year because somebody gave them something different besides maybe the book or sitting in front of the computer. They got to put their hands on, they got to do things, and it really was surprising. And some of those that I think came off kind of tough-like, they really were the best ones that wanted to go into nursing and all the other programs that were surprising. But that's where most of them said that that's where they got that traction to know that they were better than what most of their teachers thought they were even sometimes.
Okay, well, that's great. Catherine, that's the end of our time today. Remember, you're listening to the Roanoke Collaboration Project Radio, where we discuss issues and stories produced of our Radio IQ on Radio Melrose. We thank you for listening and look forward to hope you can listen next week.